Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good morning, Rochester, and all you folks on the web and the folks that will hear the podcast. Are you ready for this? It's Saturday, so guess what? That means you're listening to Soundbites, and I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And you got the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're here every week to take your questions, so please pick up the phones, dial 966-5299. 1-800-790-0415, and we will answer your computer questions. But first, we should go to a little bit of the news. This about an iTouch left behind?
Well, let's start with the poll for today.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So this week, McAfee released an update, and some of the blog headlines going around this week, an ounce of prevention can kill your PC. Wednesday, McAfee's updating system delivered enterprise customers a new antivirus definition. This is pretty normal. You get antivirus definition updates all the time. Well, apparently there was a bug in the McAfee DAT file
feature.
Version. Yeah, feature, yeah. Unexpected consequence.
Undocumented.
In the DAT file version 5958, accidentally identified a piece of Windows as being a virus. The ePolicy Orchestrator application appeared to be a virus, and so anyone that was still running Windows XP Service Pack 3 could no longer use their computer.
Isn't that special?
Isn't that special? And interestingly enough, in enterprise, most enterprises are still using XP because they all skipped Vista, and Windows 7 has been out long enough to get fully tested for enterprise
mm-hmm.
users.
Yeah.
So enterprise users are very typically behind the leading edge, because you know they want their computers to work. They don't care about new things. They just want it to work. So when any of these affected PCs rebooted, they got hung into a loop where it would just reboot and reboot and reboot and reboot. Presumably hundreds of thousands of computers were affected all over the world, basically, until the patch was found. So basically what it did is it identified a program, svchost.exe, as a virus, and that was a critical piece of Windows.
Right, that's virtually fundamental.
Yeah, fundamental. It's a service host. You know, everything in XP is a service, and it needs to be hosted.
Well, no, if I understand it right,
yeah.
Service host is the part that's responsible for, and I hate to use the geek term, but spawning, you know, or starting up all of the fundamental processes that go on inside the computer. So
he talks so much softer than Nick.
Than you, even.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at.
Sorry, you're hot.
It's every week,
Dave.
Now.
Yeah.
So
service host is a very critical piece of Windows.
Right.
And so if you were running XP Service Pack 3 and got this update, you couldn't work for a while. The fix was to go into safe mode, safe boot, and roll back that update, so that it wasn't loading, Actually, the report I'm reading now doesn't say if McAfee has got a fix out yet, but I'm assuming they do by now.
Yeah. I believe it came out.
Because that was Wednesday when this happened.
I believe it was Thursday evening.
Thursday evening
say,
they
yeah.
fixed it.
I was reading there were an awful lot of IT guys that were pretty frustrated.
Challenged.
Yep.
They always got to use the very polite.
Pleasant, I'm sure they rose to meet the challenge this week.
So
but,
we heard.
That didn't make their lives any easier.
We heard,
thanks, McAfee.
Yeah.
We heard from several local users here in town about large installations being disrupted inside Rochester government.
Yeah, that's true.
So the poll this week is, I got caught up by the McAfee screw-up, and your choices are, oh, yes, I did, I dodged it, I don't use McAfee, and, heh, you guys need an antivirus? currently leading the poll with 71% of the votes is I don't use McAfee. 27% is, heck, you don't need you guys use an antivirus. One person said they dodged it, and no one says they got affected by it, with 55 votes currently in. Take a look at the poll at soundbites.org. Let us know how you got affected by the McAfee screw-up. And we all know, I don't know word for word like Nick does. Oh. People think Nick reads this stuff.
No, he makes it up
on the fly.
Yeah, you can go to his
exactly
webpage.
The same again and again. You can give an opinion at asknick.com. That's asknick.com. Ooh. What? Stereo bells. Yeah, we're in stereo now on FM.
I saw it. Figured we should hit it.
Oh, by the way, Rob is listening to us.
Oh, no.
He's down in Tampa Bay, you know, just sunning himself and all these girls around him and everything else.
Nice.
Meanwhile, folks have been asking me, what happened to Nick? Well, I'd like to report Nick has been in the Droid Institute care unit suffering from droid overload. He had this glass look over his face, you know, and his wife was quite concerned, and we did have to admit him.
Yeah, you'll
for
get
a while.
That with
he
the
was
droid.
He's getting the mechanical appendages attached.
It was the apps overload syndrome, but it is determined that he will be better, and hopefully by next week they're going to release him. He will be medded and come back here next week and be back on the show. So I know we all missed him, but he is doing better, and they even managed to pry the droid out of his hands. Not too far. You know, he started getting withdrawal symptoms.
But it is wireless, yeah.
So it was within eyesight. So, you know, he's calming down. But, yeah, he'll be back here next week, so no worries. He's doing fine.
Yeah. And we said, going back to the poll a minute, we should make note that this is not unusual in the antivirus world. McAfee,
no.
Norton, they've all been hit by this every now and then.
Well, even Norton. I mean, thank goodness.
You're trying to guess what might be a virus when you're making these antivirus programs. You know about the millions of viruses that are there, but you're trying to guess what might be a virus, too, and that sometimes bites you.
Well, it was also, I mean, finally, Norton, I can honestly say, you know, for years now, I think it's been, since 2006, that Norton went down the toilet. Because
mm-hmm. Got very slow,
2005
very
was very iffy. 6, 7, and 8, forget it. There were pieces of junk. And, you know, not worth the bucks, and everybody else was bailing from them. Well, 2010, they got wise, and they literally rebuilt all the code. We've been running it on one of our machines, and it's running very well. I mean, it's not lagging the machine down, because before it was trying to check everything 16 ways from Sunday, even though Windows was already doing that. But it had to do it, too. And that was the biggest gripe, because it was just, you know, program overload.
Sure.
And now they've streamlined it. You can even sit there and some of the gadgets in it and monitor it and see how little of a footprint it's actually taking,
right,
which is really good. You know, and it's slimmed down. So I can actually say, you know, along with AVG and Avast, which I still use on the rest of my machines, Norton 2010, folks, if you're looking for something that you can get an all-in-one package and, you know, have something that you're comfortable with and pay for, I would say right now the Norton 2010.
What's interesting, though, is now that Microsoft has their own AV suite out, the Microsoft Security Essentials, mm-hmm. For free, how is that going to impact the rest of the AV world? It doesn't come pre-installed by default. You do have to download it separately. So someone at Microsoft was actually thinking about the lawyers,
yeah,
because they've been sued for bundling software before. So it's not pre-installed. You can choose whatever one you want to download. But now that Microsoft has a free one, and you would sort of think it would work better than the others, because it is Microsoft, they should know how their operating system works.
Well, you'd hope so.
You would hope so, yeah. We'll have to see in a few, we'll have to see in a few years.
Disney
what
had a tune for that. Fairy tales will come true.
True, yeah. Yes.
All right, we should also mention the Ustream is running. So that you can watch the video.
For a good scare.
For a good scare, to see what we're doing on Ustream.
Yeah, we can wave hi at you. Hi, guys.
And the Jazz 90.1 audio stream is also running. So if you go to our website, soundbites.org, there are links on the front page for both the audio stream at Jazz 90.1 and also the video stream at Ustream. So you can watch us as well. Nick is not here, so we don't have the EFI... FNet IRC chat running, but Ustream does have a chat facility as part of their video, so mm-hmm. So we've got that open.
So you can keep that open all in the same window. You can see us on the left and do the chatting on the right.
Right.
And
stand
pop that
up,
out
sit
in
down,
window.
Fight, fight, fight.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. But that's fun.
Information overload. You know, we give folks...
Too many places, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, with our stream and that, I mean, because we're choking that to death, Rob had to reset it a couple times because we got so many listeners all over the U.S. I mean, South Carolina, Nebraska, I know for a few, and Omaha and Oregon and California. I mean, they're just scattered all over the place. And, you know, that's cool because, you know, we're getting out to, you know, and this is such a unique way to still connect is the web. I think since we've come here, our listenership has grown even more because, you know, of the different ways that they can connect, you know, and still see us and live on the web.
And the Jazz 90.1 audience is more discriminating than others.
Yes. Very. Well, see, that's the other
more
thing.
More sophisticated.
Well, that's the other thing, too.
Not just hotheads listening to someone yell at the microphone. Sorry.
Hey.
No, we've tapped into a whole different audience because when we came here, for you folks that don't know this, back in June of last year, and Jazz 90.1, member-supported Jazz 90.1, is one of very few jazz stations left. And it has quite an audience. I mean, I was doing a show on Thursday nights, 6 to 9. It was amazing the number of folks that would still be listening, and they were literally all over the U.S. So we've tapped into that. So we still got a lot of our loyal listeners that followed us from our previous stations before and come here. They're happy because they're getting a full 2 hours of sound bites. We're here every Saturday because there is no preempting for football, NASCAR, girls' field hockey, or tiddlywinks.
Although there was something going on at the school today, and
we didn't get interrupted for that either. So, you know, all is good, and thank goodness to Rob, you know, having faith in us and allowing us to come to this time slot on Saturdays to have this much fun.
He's got to take us with him next time he goes on one of these trips. NAB was last week, too.
He was texting me. It's like, dude, you're on vacation.
All right, so we talked about the poll, and you brought up that iPhone story that's been popping in the news this week. So you guys will have to fill me in on what I don't know, but what I know so far is that there's an Apple engineer. Apple's getting ready to ship the next version of the iPhone, and they're probably still in the testing phase, as best as I understand it. So the one thing that you have to do when you test things is you actually have to take them out of the lab, because those labs are, you know, like a big Faraday cage. They block all kinds of signals going in and out when you start dealing with wireless.
And it's a perfect environment.
Right. So you want to test it out in the world where you're in real cell towers, and you want to make sure that the device works the way it's supposed to. So one of the Apple engineers, some mid-20s guy, goes out for his birthday, from what I'm understanding, to a bar with some friends. Mm-hmm. And one reason or another, accidentally leaves.
Alcohol is involved.
Well, it should be. At a bar? What? Yeah. So he leaves this behind for one reason or another. And somebody finds it.
And now, what do the rest of you do when you find something at a bar? Yeah, you find something somebody lost at a bar.
Well, you turn it in.
Yeah, give it to the bartender, yeah.
So he finds it at the bar, and apparently he somehow realizes that it's valuable. And I'm not quite sure how he figured that out or what.
Well, just finding it.
To power it up. Right, he was able to power it up and apparently get Facebook information from it, from the person who was making use of it. And I don't think we need to mention the Apple guy's name because it's already been dragged through the mud this week. But so this guy who finds it, keeps it, and starts shopping it around to these online gadget blogs. And he starts at one, and the first place he tries to sell it to, or at least provide information to, says, no, we checked with our lawyers, and if we take that, we're going to be in some serious trouble. Because there's some serious and distinct statutes about what constitutes stolen goods that you find out in public in California. Isn't that right, Steve?
Yeah, if you find it and keep it, it becomes stolen. If you find it and then try to turn it into the owner, that's what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Especially since he found the guy's Facebook page on the phone. So you give it to the bartender, or you call the guy's Facebook page that you found on the phone.
So I guess Apple did what they call a remote wipe. So they disabled the phone. Apparently, whoever lost it went to, hopefully, their boss, or remote wiped it themselves. Mm-hmm. And so it essentially became a paperweight. So it wasn't functional any longer. So this guy decides that he wants to make a quick buck and makes a contact with another gadget blog who agrees to pay $5,000 to get this. And they're thinking they can, you know, tear it apart, see what's inside, and hopefully gain some insight about a product that might be shipping in a few months. So, and gain all the page views from all the stories they might write. But it didn't stop there.
And they're claiming they didn't know it was a real iPhone. And they didn't know it was a prototype. They didn't know it was stolen. They just wanted, they didn't know if it was a fake or not. So they wanted, they wanted to get their hands on it to be able to figure out if it was a fake or not.
Because they know what the chips inside should look like if they're a genuine Apple product, and they know in general.
Well,
so they just wanted to see what was in the inside, because there were some features that are coming up, like a forward-facing camera and a couple of other things that they wanted to see would be in the next version.
Mm-hmm.
So it's turning out that they have gotten an awful lot of press this week, and what's ended up happening is that they ended up outing the guy, the Apple engineer, who made a very honest but unfortunate mistake by leaving it behind. And now he's, you know, in a world of hurt this week, career-wise, anyway.
Is he still even there?
And it went back and forth on the blogs, and eventually Apple, well, the guy himself, sent a letter to the gadget blog saying, you know, I want my iPhone back. And one of the things that's really upsetting most of the blogosphere is sort of the flippant attitude of this one blog site that paid this money for it is, we didn't know it was stolen. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right.
We thought it was a fake. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And, you know, if you want it back, why don't you just send us a letter? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Well, meanwhile, all the readers are coming by and they're just interested in the schadenfreude of the guy who, you know, lost it.
Yeah.
And ironically,
soapy.
He was at a German specialty beer bar in the Cupertino area, and Lufthansa Airlines has offered him a free trip to Germany to continue on his German beer exploration.
Well, at least I've got a sense of humor about it.
Yep. Okay, folks, that music means we got to take a short break. But hey. Pick up the phone. We got the lines open if you want to pick up and dial 966-5299, 1-800-790-0415 outside the Rochester area. Or you can even check the web and send your questions there. We are Soundbites.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Every Sunday evening, join me, Derek Lucas, for The Spectrum. We find the mysterious side of jazz. Music to move your mind, body, soul, spirit, as well as help you do your homework. Every Sunday evening, 10 o'clock, here on Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Be sure to join Jazz 90.1 for a live performance of the Jive Street 5, Wednesday, April 28th from 7 to 8 p.m. The Jive Street 5 features Mike Van Allen on piano, Jim Steele on trumpet and flugelhorn, Sheldon Trippi on bass, Brian King on drums, and Todd Yarton on vocals. The Jazz 90.1 live studio concert series continues with the Jive Street 5, Wednesday, April 28th from 7 to 8 p.m. on Jazz 90.1. What does it take to create a great jazz radio station? The best jazz music? Sure. Knowledgeable DJs who love the music as much as you do? Naturally. A fine facility with the best equipment? Of course. But what is most important in creating a great jazz radio station is the decision to make it happen. And that is what you do when you decide to become a member of Jazz 90.1. Listeners enjoy a great jazz station, but members make them happen. Keep Jazz 90.1 happening. Call 966-JAZZ, 966-5299 today and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Yusef Lateef, Kenny Barron, Muhal Richard Abrams, Cedar Walton, Bill Holman, Bobby Hutcherson, Annie Ross, and George Avakian. This year's National Endowment for the Arts Jazz Masters. I'm Wendell Pierce. Join us as they gather to hear and play jazz history.
It's a very special Jazz at Lincoln Center.
Wednesday, April 28th, from 6 to 7 p.m., only on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon, folks. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I am Dennis Worster.
And like we said, folks, don't worry. Nick is doing better. The withdrawal from the droid is slowly setting in, and we should have him back here next week. So stay tuned. And we'd like to remind you, folks, hey, we're sitting here. We're willing to take your computer questions. Pick up the phones and dial 966-5299, 1-800-790-0415, and we will answer them. Or if we don't know the answer, we can make up good ones. We've been doing that successfully for 20 years. Speaking of which, let's go to one of these. One person had a question about the spy bot not being on part of the security tango. What we're doing, folks, is basically from time to time we change up the programs that we recommend. It's not to say that if you want an extra program to run, you can still run SpyBot, try that. But there's always, like right now we're doing the Malware Bytes Super Anti-Spyware in either AVG or Advanced. And at least three of them, one antivirus program, don't do more. I've had folks that literally were trying to run two antivirus programs and about six malware and spyware programs, and they were wondering why their machine was running so slow. It's like, yeah, it's doing all of that constantly, and it's like, you go from...
How is it going to load the Facebook page when it's so busy looking for all those pieces of spyware?
Yeah, it can't. And, it's... forget it! It ain't going to happen, folks.
Yeah, we've got Farmville to play. We can't wait for all those things to finish.
Yep.
Sorry, I... Don't do farm.
No.
And the one of the big reasons, too, is that the programs tend to leapfrog each other, that one program would be really, really good, and then another program comes out that's better, and then we switch to that, and then the first program comes and makes a new release that's even better, and we switch to that. So it's who's got the better program at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big arms race, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
But, all right, so go with that. What else did you have in... I'll give you guys a couple.
Okay.
What else do we have in the news there? You guys got some stuff there.
Did you have?
Well, I was thinking we could talk about backups for a second.
Oh yeah,
because backups are
something that folks don't do enough of, and I see it constantly in my shop. I don't know about you, Dennis.
Well, all the time. Of course, my clients. It's one of the things I recommend all the time. There's no. There's no wrong number of backups to have except for zero. So the thing that I've been reading lately was about how to make sure, backups and being safe is kind of a destination. And in general, it's difficult to figure out how to do that. But one recommendation I says you need to follow a rule called the 3-2-1 rule. And people talk to me and they say, what do you mean the 3-2-1? Well, they say you need to have backups that are three copies of anything that's important in two different kinds of media. So if you back up once to a second hard drive or a flash drive, that's fine. But also, complement that with an optical media, like a DVD, for the stuff that's really, really important. And I'm talking about things like your family photos that you don't have the negatives for anymore. So if those are gone, you're in big trouble. And then to make sure that one of those copies, and this is the one part, to make sure that one of them is stored in an off-site location.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I had one client had her husband had passed away, and they had a lot of old family photos on there, and the thing started to click.
Right.
But luckily, it wasn't clicking enough, because if you start getting the click of death, folks, and what I mean by that is you'll hear the drive, and as it's spinning up, you'll hear it go clunk, literally click, click.
Right.
And it's the actuators, and those are the little heads banging against the back wall because it can't do a seek in that, and it's all messed up. The brains of the hardware are literally scrambled. And what you would have to do after that is go to like a company like DriveSaver, and they would have to take it apart, put it in a clean room, And you are talking about thousands of dollars sometimes to get stuff back.
Right, and it's so easily preventable, too. You know, making extra copies of things that are really important to you is
the responsible thing to do. How important is your data to you?
Right, so I've got
and we can
pictures
all
of
say...
my kids and family trips and things that are simply irreplaceable. You know, I can't make my kids any younger than they are and go back and do it again and position them and say, okay, smile for the camera.
I don't want mine any younger.
So, you know, you've got to protect that. And there are a lot of choices these days, being able to do that either to something as simple as an external drive that you plug in. There's a, you know, at least for the Mac, there's the feature built into the OS called Time Machine that makes life a lot easier. It backs up everything on your machine once an hour and keeps track of all the changes, lets you roll back in time. But the other thing to consider is that you need to get that off-site, you know, that one mm-hmm. off-site copy.
Or a fire or a flood or a theft.
Yeah, or just go into a firebox.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, one of the tricks there is that you need to make sure it's a data-ready fire safe.
Right.
Because a lot of fire safes are only good for paper.
But the key thing to do, folks, is, now here's, you know, because a lot of folks will go ahead and put it up in a room or they'll put it up in the attic. Wrong. The best place to put it, if you're going to do you know, one of these approved boxes and everything else, is put it in the basement.
Well, and maybe up off the floor just a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm saying up on a shelf,
right,
down in the basement, because fire goes up.
True.
And most wire and water and everything else, when they're putting it out, will come down and keeping it less cooler. The
right.
heat will always rise.
Heat rises, so those...
In the basement, there's usually not much to burn down there, so it's usually a lower temperature down there
and those
versus throwing it up in the attic.
Right.
The plastic CDs you put in the attic will melt.
Mm-hmm.
even without a fire?
Oh, my attic gets warm up there because...
Yeah. Even if you keep audio CDs in your car, you'll feel how hot they get.
And they get warped.
Yeah, even during the winter, too.
That was another discussion I had with somebody. They go, as far, you know, we were recommending the gold CDs for storing
your
data.
Archival,
because
They're rated for 100 years.
Well, how do I know that's still going to be current in, say, 10 years from now? Who knows? Just like everything else. I mean, you know, 15 years ago, we were still putting stuff on CDs, and people were backing it up to floppies.
Floppy disks,
and everything
zither disks, CyQuest disks. Yep.
As things progress, you take that, say, CD of all your family and everything else that's important to you and move it up to the next generation of media storage.
It's kind of interesting that CDs have lasted almost 20 years, and they're still a standard. They've mostly been replaced by DVDs now. For higher capacity, but we're starting to see the high-definition formats come out. Blu-ray offers 50 gigabytes per disc, and that's always been the thing with CDs is their relatively limited capacity. You know, a standard CD is less than 1 gigabyte.
Yep.
You can get a 1,000-gigabyte hard drive for $100.
But if you don't want to go through all the hassle of going to the store, picking out, trying to figure out what's going to connect to your computer, what's going to be big enough, can I afford this, you might want to start looking into... online backups, and there are half a dozen companies
that'd
be more than happy to help you figure out how to do
Time
that.
Time Warner and Frontier, I believe, both offer all their clients offsite storage.
I think
it comes with some space.
Right.
10 gig, is it?
I know they used to offer web hosting. They'd offer you some space that you could transfer up to.
Frontier
Are
has
they doing
their,
more than that now?
Frontier has their Peace of Mind storage. Where it's not free, but I'm trying to find it on the web. I think it's like $5 a month.
So do they give you a piece of software you run on your computer that every so often copies things automatically? Because the ones I'm thinking of are these online services like Carbonite or Mozy or some of the other ones where they give you an application that you can run, and when you run this, it checks to see what's new on your computer and then uploads that. Now, the first time you do this, you know, it's going to take a long time because most people... They have really fast speeds coming into their computer, but not really fast speeds going back out.
Yeah.
So, like I said, that's going to take a long time to move all the information the first time. Well, but as you go on, you know, it may only take an hour or so, but it happens automatically and you're covered and you don't have to worry about it.
And we're still so far behind compared to third world countries that have so much faster internet service
and wireless,
cheaper.
Yeah. Sure. No, it's true. What is it now? South Korea is number one.
And they pay so much less when you compare apples to apples.
Sure.
I mean, you know, again, it's just here, and the money-hungry investors and everything else, you know, just trying to bleed you dry, wanting more and more, and really not giving you much more.
Well, and that's partly because of our infrastructure.
Because they can.
Right. Well, we ran all that copper 100 years ago
yeah.
in all the lines, you know. think back to when you had actual telephones with actual, you know, bells in them at your house that were hooked up to copper lines. Somebody had to run all of that under the streets and everywhere else.
Yeah, Frontier has their Peace of Mind hard drive backup storage, unlimited storage for $5 a month for one PC, which is about the same price as Carbonite and Mozy, the commercial services. And they can run automatically, which is very nice. There are also free online services. Dropbox gives you 2 gigabytes for free. Box.net is that also like 2 gigabytes?
I believe it's 2 gigs for free, and they have other options. If you pay just a little bit more, you get a lot more space.
You can get a little more than that. And that shows up as an icon on your desktop, and you just drag your stuff into it, and it automatically uploads to the internet.
Yeah.
But just having any second copy is better than none.
It's enough to keep you out of the doghouse from your wife when you lose those pictures. I mean, you don't want to be the guy who's sleeping on the couch because of that, because they're simply just not coming back. I mean, there's nothing you can do.
The brand new baby pictures, you know, baby's first walk, first day of school, and we don't have those negatives anymore to be able to restore the photographs you've lost.
Speaking of which, I'm going to kind of do, because it's kind of sad I can't do it because, you know, Nick's not here to do the intro, but sort of one of my rants.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Oh, I can't thank the 1-800-I-DON'T-SPEAK-ENGLISH numbers enough. Because one of our loyal listeners said, I guess, what had transpired, to give you folks the full picture. One of my clients who listened to the show is a member supporter here at Jazz 90.1, had a friend, and she was all worried that because she's calling tech support. She had been on the phone for 3 hours for him, and her machine was literally toast. And, of course, 1-800-I-DON'T-SPEAK-ENGLISH wanted her to reformat it. She said, no, sorry, this has got to go this way. And I go, she goes, I'm sure. No, I'm very positive. If you call up Dave, he can probably help you, and that it doesn't have to happen. Well, you know, we took the time. She brought it on in. She was, you know, she's just about in tears. And I said, what's the matter?
And
she
goes,
they want me to do. And I got all this information, and I got to have it because it's her business.
Most of the time, people don't realize when tech support tells you to run the restore disks, you're going to lose all of your stuff.
They just want to do it the quickest and easiest because theirs is all about the numbers.
That's their
responsibility,
right. How
many calls I can get to and solve an issue.
Shut up and reboot.
Yeah,
my average call time has gone way down.
So anyways, she brought it in, and we were able to get literally 7 years of business information back.
So that was a smart move, bringing it in.
And we wound up turning around, backing up all her stuff. I wound up doing her an external drive. Matter of fact, she got two of them. She was going out to get a fire safe so she could rotate them between one and the other. So thank you, 1-800-I-DON'T-SPEAK-ENGLISH, because, you know, I proved you guys wrong because they were sitting there saying, no, sorry, this is the only way. No, there's no wrong way you can do it. You're not going to get your data back. And like I say, this woman was in tears, and I wound up getting this nice Edie's edible baskets with all the fruit and all that.
Sounds good so far.
Oh, it was fantastic because I love my pineapple.
Sure.
And it had, you know, the melon balls and all that, all healthy stuff, which we need once in a while in the shop because suffering from chest of drawers. Mm-hmm. My chest is down around my drawers.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God.
It happens when you get older. You know, what can you say? Go ahead. You had something there, Dennis?
Yep. I've got an email here. I'm going to try and do the best I can to decipher it.
Oh, go for it.
All right. So this person is Keith from Joplin, Missouri. So hello, Keith, if you're listening.
See? Another one that's, you know, all over the U.S.
Hey, who would have thought?
Yeah.
So he's been trying to set up a wireless adapter on his computer, and previously he's been using his wired network before. And the wireless adapter he's trying to use is the Linksys WMP54G. And he's been able to run in the install CD, but it doesn't auto-run. He may have auto-run turned off, I suspect, there.
Which is a good security precaution.
Yeah, no, that's actually the better way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He says he was able to run the setup and get the driver installed. I probably did it manually, which is fine. So he looks at the device under Device Manager, and he sees that there's a problem. So there's probably a little yellow triangle next to it. And the device status shows that this device cannot start code 10. He says that would seem to indicate a possible issue with the driver. I never could find a later version driver, so he thinks he's got the most recent one. The motherboard onboard network port is disabled, and it used to run in that wired mode without any problems. He's tried other PCI slots. That didn't help, and he's not sure where to go next.
Does it say what operating system he's running?
It says he's running XP Home Service Pack 2. on a 3 gig RAM Athlon 64 3800. So relatively recent machine, not entirely up to date on his OS.
Yeah.
Running.
But it
pretty
fine,
vanilla.
Yeah.
Linksys wireless software. Boy, that's surprising.
Unless something got scrambled in that.
This device cannot start. Seems to be the.
I wonder if he should try maybe a hard reset on the router.
You know, it sounds like his card itself in the computer is not starting.
It sounds like the driver isn't starting up the way it's supposed to.
Halfless.
Hmm.
Maybe reset the cart, pull it out, do a reboot,
sometimes,
put it back in.
Right.
Sometimes those installers need the driver installed before the cart is physically installed.
Yeah, and it's not always that way. It's hard to guess right the first time.
So one of the tricks is turn the computer off, physically remove the cart.
Now, wait a minute. You know what the other thing is? Here's the possibility. If it's an old cart and, he's got his wireless network, say, set up for G.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a G, the WMP54G.
The card can't handle. Did he say what model the card was?
He says, yep, it's a Linksys WMP54G, but he doesn't talk about what router he's connecting to.
There could be an incompatibility there if he's trying to do.
If he's
he's got a G network card, that should
be okay.
Go to any of the routers, whether it's,
fall back to G if necessary.
It can handle the back ones because you can go to any, hotspot.
Yeah.
They don't always have the latest and greatest there, but they just offer WEP, WPA.
So if you were going to look for, he says he couldn't find a later version driver, but if you were going to look for one, Dave, where would you head first? Where would you direct people to?
For
a Linksys driver for their card.
Just go right to the webpage. I mean, Linksys is very good. Even stepping you through.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big problems that we run into with Linksys stuff is that there's often a version number as part of the model number. So on the WMP.
And that's on the hardware itself. Right.
On the WMP54G, there's version 1, 2, 4, and 4.1.
What happened to 3?
I don't know. So you may have to download the driver for your specific version and remove the card, reboot, put the card back in, and reboot so that it recognizes it as a new card.
Yep.
Okay, well, tell you what, we got to take a short break. Phones are open, so you can give us a call at 966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'd love to hear from you, and we will be back very shortly.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The Pithide Room, Ship's Paradise, The Cotton Club, Shalimar, Jinx and Jones, Indigo's, Ben Keaton's, The Oak Tree Lounge, Top of the Plaza, Round Towner, The Pine Grill, The Glass Onion. Those are places that we all loved, but they're really not in the past. The doctor keeps them from being just a memory. Hi, I'm Paul Kiley. Join me every Monday morning from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. following the Spectrum for Jazz Overnight on your member-supported 24-hour jazz station, Jazz 90.1 and Jazz901.org.
Greece Community Broadcasting Incorporated is proud to present Art Loves Jazz 2010, a gala fundraising event to benefit Jazz 90.1. This fifth annual fundraising event will be held Thursday evening, May 20th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. with great live jazz from Uptown Groove and the Bob Snyder Trio. There will be a silent auction, a live art auction, and great gourmet food. Art Loves Jazz 2010 will be held at Artisan Works, located at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester. Artisan Works is a not-for-profit community event space filled with art and other treasures from Rochester and around the world in its 60,000-square-foot gallery. Proceeds from Art Loves Jazz 2010 benefit Jazz 90.1. Tickets are only $30 per person and can be purchased by calling 585-966-2660. That's 966-2660. Or online at jazz901.org. Only a limited number will be sold, so get yours today.
Hi, this is Al DiMeola. Did you know that April is Jazz Appreciation Month? Did you know that jazz represents the cultural heritage of the United States? It has its roots in blues and ragtime and then swing, bebop, fusion. So celebrate the glorious music called jazz. Go to a jazz concert. Explore a new era or musician. Go dancing to jazz music or just jam with your friends. Jazz made in America, enjoyed worldwide.
Be sure to join Jazz 90.1 for a live performance at the Jive Street 5, Wednesday, April 28th from 7 to 8 p.m. The Jive Street 5 features Mike Van Allen on piano, Jim Steele on trumpet and flugelhorn, Sheldon Trippi on bass, Brian King on drums, and Todd Yarton on vocals. The Jazz 90.1 live studio concert series continues with the Jive Street 5, Wednesday, April 28th from 7 to 8 p.m. on Jazz 90.1.
Hey, this is Rip Savage. Join me tonight for Fusion, 10 p.m., right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And we are here to take your computer questions, so you know, don't be bashful. Pick up the phone, dial 966-5299, 1-800-790-0415 outside the Rochester area. And we'll answer your computer questions. If we don't, we'll make something up and still get you off the phone thinking we did. It's the best we can do.
Yeah, we're having some questions in the Ustream chat room that some people can't see the video.
Don't worry, we're working on it.
We're working on it. We are seeing it on other computers here. So it's pulling it in from Ustream after it's getting pushed out to Ustream, but... It's interesting. We're trying to see what's happening here.
Well, when all else fails, you know, reboot and try it one more time. Don't worry, we'll still be here, and you can see us when you get back. So I've got a news item about Israel and related to the iPad. Thought I'd pass this along. What do you think, guys?
The iPad isn't officially available in any other country yet. It's only available in the U.S.
Right.
And in fact, it was so popular in the U.S. they pushed back the ship date for the rest of the world another month. So now it's going to be the end of May before it ships in other countries.
So far they've shipped the one that you can use that's only Wi-Fi, so that you can use it in any Wi-Fi hotspot, local coffee shop, your house, etc., etc. But soon will be a new model that will also have a 3G radio. So it'll use the cell phone network for data. So anywhere you can get a AT&T, I assume, cell phone signal, you should be able to get data. And this is fantastic for those of us that don't already have a smartphone, as that the iPad will be useful for us everywhere else when we're not at a hotspot. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, same,
unless you go to Israel, apparently.
Well, so what's been happening is that people are buying them in the U.S. and then shipping them overseas. There have been several cases where they're going, being put up on eBay and being sold for thousands of dollars. The retail price is $500 for the base model.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In fact, eBay started their own iPad store, a special iPad store for people selling iPads overseas.
When's the last time they did anything like that, eBay? Did they do that for the Wii when it was in short supply?
I don't think so.
Nintendo?
Yep.
So they're saying that if you go there, Israeli Customs is going to confiscate them. They've already confiscated 10.
So they can start a third world war.
According to the Associated Press. And if you're a tourist and you go there, you'll get it.
We resell.
We will give it back to you when you leave, they say. The communications ministry there is blaming the iPad's Wi-Fi.
Which is based on the U.S. standards.
Yeah, it's based on low-powered American standards as opposed to the European standards, which Israel uses. And they're working with Apple and local distributor iDigital to improve the import of iPads into the country. But even when that happens, it's not clear whether customs agents are going to try to distinguish between American and European. So I guess you'll have to put a big sticker on the back of yours with a big American flag if it's the American one, and then get it taken away. So maybe, there's my next business thing. I'll just make stickers to put on the back of iPads to say, no, I got this in...
Switzerland.
Perfect.
Yeah, yes. I mean, that's a neutral country.
Yeah,
so
that's the best one.
Put it on there and, no, see?
No, it's totally fine.
It's legit.
Yes, I'll be on my way now.
In fact, there was a related story I read this morning about a guy that has sort of made a business of it already. He has bought 10 iPads and is shipping them overseas. Apple currently has a limit of 2 iPads per purchase. Because they don't want you to buy too many. They want to have enough to go around. So this kid goes and buys 2, and then goes back and buys 2 more, and goes back and buys 2 more. And apparently he's been going to the same store, which that might be his first mistake.
Yeah.
And so they cut him off at 10 and have told him he has a lifetime ban. He can no longer buy any more iPads at 10.
Because Apple doesn't want any more of his money. It's not green enough anymore.
I mean, wait a minute. How can they stop him?
It doesn't seem American, does it?
Yeah,
he's got to go to another store, buy them online. But it's not unusual to limit quantities that a single person can purchase for any type of product when it's initially released because of constraints.
They've got like a cooling off period, you might say.
Yeah.
You know, I had the same thing. I was ordering a number of copies of... again, I'm a Mac guy, so I was ordering copies of...
We don't hold that against you. I don't hold it against him.
So I was trying to get...
I put up with him for 20 years.
10.6.
Worse than a marriage.
The OS 10.6, which is the most recent one for Macs. If you try and order it from Amazon, they limit you to 3 copies. I tried to order 7 because I needed 7 licenses for different things I was working on. And the Amazon came back and said, sorry, no, we could sell you 3. And I said, well, wait a minute. I have enough money for 7. Don't you guys like money?
Yeah.
And they said, well, you know, 3
today's
is the limit
economy?
We have. And... So I had to figure out what to do next, and it was kind of rough.
Yeah,
so they're saying,
close that order, make a new order.
But I don't understand, if your device is low power and you take it to another country that uses a different standard, it should simply not work or get a very weak signal. How is this hurting the infrastructure that they're using? I mean, it's not like Israel has a tech support department that you call when your iPad from overseas.
Well, they sit there and control so much. I mean, I know for a fact a friend of mine in Australia, they're saying there that, you know, they're starting to put certain restrictions and that type of stuff of where they can go.
Australia
and
is censoring the internet, period.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. And they're putting all kinds of limits and restrictions and everything else. And it's like, you know, they don't have it like we do here, you know, freedom of speech and all that other stuff.
Well, the issue here probably is in radio frequency interference. You know, we've got the FCC that rates devices on how much interference they can use, and every country uses slightly different frequencies for different things.
That's true.
And so if this device enters their country and it's emitting different frequencies than their devices are expecting to use, it could theoretically interfere with something.
Yep. Some type of pollution that...
But it's probably just the Israeli customs people want to play with iPads before the rest of the world.
Yeah, and hey, who knows what they're going to get off of it, too.
Well, so if you get it back after your vacation and you notice that all your games have been leveled up to other levels, you've unlocked additional things.
Or all
things.
Of a sudden you start getting other email from other countries that you didn't expect.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think this has the story that last year in Israel there was an American tourist who apparently had some stickers on the back of her MacBook that may have appeared to be pro-Palestine.
Okay.
And so they shot her MacBook.
Like with a gun?
With a gun. Shot it 3 times. They evacuated the plaza she was in.
Give it CPR?
Yeah. Yeah, they evacuated the plaza. There were announcements in English and Hebrew that there was police action going on, and the police grabbed this MacBook and shot it 3 times.
Wow, they're serious.
They're serious about it.
They don't mess around.
Well, later on, they
told
her
those Macs were violent things.
When they finally,
they inspire passionate thoughts. You might say.
So when they found out later that it wasn't a bomb, the woman who owns the computer blogged about it. They gave her a voucher to buy a replacement computer. But apparently there's only one Apple dealer in Israel, and
surprise,
it was closed when she got there.
Well, what can you do?
Yeah.
You got another email there, Steve?
Yeah, let's take a look at another email here. Gordo from Pittsburgh writes that he says he's not too sharp, but don't blame yourself. Blame the computers.
Yeah.
So he's on the Jazz 901 site and on the Soundbite site and can't figure out how to listen over the internet because his radio reception is terrible.
Okay.
On the Jazz 901 website, there's a button on the upper right-hand corner that says Listen Live. Now, we did find out a few weeks ago that some web browsers can block this Listen Live button. In a minute, I'll go back through our tech list and find out why. The Listen Live button is at the far right end of the menu bar on the Jazz 901 site, next to the Jazz Events calendar. It's an animated GIF. So if you have an ad blocker installed on your computer or a flash blocker installed, it may not pop up. The button may still work, but it may not pop up. You can always go to jazz901.org/listen-live, and that's the actual link that it takes you to, which then will present you with two links. There's a high bandwidth link and a low bandwidth link. And what this does is it downloads what's called an M3U, which is an MP3 stream file. So you need an MP3 streaming program like iTunes or Windows Media Player or VLC, and then that is the program that actually plays the music for you. So on the Jazz 901 website, you get the link, and then that link opens in your audio media player, either iTunes or Windows Media Player, something like that.
Steve, did you see the CBS News report this week related to the photocopiers? Did you hear about this story?
Oh, yeah. One of the limitations of the iPad is that you can't print.
Well, that's a good one, too. Yeah. Go ahead.
So you can't. Yeah, the iPad doesn't print natively. There are apps you can buy to let it print, but it doesn't print natively. So you just put it on your photocopier and hit copy.
Hit copy. I haven't tested that yet, but I'm dying to know if that works. So if anybody has one and has tried that out, give us a call and let us know. The other thing the one I was actually thinking about was it was a security issue. So if you have a company that leases a photocopier, and it's a fancier copier like we've seen in the last 10 years or so, where you can scan things in and scan them all at once and then have it make a bunch of copies or arrange the pages differently, it's actually storing those images on a hard drive that lives inside the copier. Now, you don't usually think about a hard drive being inside your copier, but if you think about it a little bit harder, it makes a little bit of sense that you want to have a place to store those things. So what happens when you have a company, and typically you lease these, you don't buy them outright. So at the end of the lease, if you don't choose to keep it or buy it out, they take it back, and it goes in a warehouse. So what CBS found was they bought a few of these, and they were able to extract all kinds of information from these drives. It sounds like the information is just not getting erased. So
or if it's getting erased, it's a simple erase and not an overwrite.
Not enough.
Yeah.
And apparently there is an encryption option that the people who lease the things to you do offer, but it's a $500 option, and a lot of people just kind of go, I'll skip it.
Yeah.
You know, and so what's happening now is CBS bought a few of these, and they are checking them over, and what do they find? Well, they find that one of them came from a police department. And, you know, there's a lot of fairly sensitive information that goes on at a police department.
Hello?
Another one came from, I believe it was a medical insurance office. And as you might expect, there's all sorts of records
there. Talk about information overload in those?
Well, overload and just insecurity. I mean, if they're handling your information for a traffic ticket.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're going to give social security numbers
exactly.
And everything else.
Driver's licenses.
Yeah, everything is there, you know, I mean.
Medical insurance cards, anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a major problem. So they were saying that there are lots of other countries that buy these by the shipping container and refurbish them and use them. But anybody can go in and buy these at auction and grab them and theoretically get lots of information. Mm-hmm. Might be yours.
I also read the same thing about used ATMs. You know, a lot of convenience stores and bars and small stores will have a little ATM in there for customer use. And there have been several cases where one of the news magazines would buy a used ATM from a store going out of business. And inside an ATM is the transaction record of everything that ever went through that ATM.
Right.
And so everyone that ever used that ATM, their information is stored inside the ATM.
Wow. And you hope they block out some of the account numbers with, you know, X's or something else, or hopefully don't give written records of the PINs or anything else.
Yeah.
But, ouch, that's pretty tough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was part of a story on fake ATMs where bad guys will buy, you know, an ATM at auction. So it's a working ATM. You put a few dollars in it, so it doesn't seem too suspicious. And they just stuck it on the street somewhere. and were watching people use this ATM. And then they went up to them with an open camera saying, you know, why did you use this ATM? Well, I needed some money.
Yeah.
Well, didn't you, do you trust it? Do you have any security qualms about using it? No.
Well, a lot of folks don't even think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a fake ATM. It's not even hooked up to anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing there that's gone on, too, where they'll put these other fake cameras and it looks at it and it'll read.
Yeah, a skimmer. Yeah. A skimmer to read your card and then a camera to watch you type your PIN. And the bad guys will put those on real ATMs outside of banks and whatnot and then go back the next day and collect all your information.
Mm-hmm. Oh, didn't they do that at, there was like a security conference at some hotel?
Yeah, it was a black hat, I think.
Sure.
And one of the security doors had a an ATM outside the security door, and it wasn't secure.
No, it had one of those credit card, ATM card skimmer on it.
A skimmer, yeah.
And it was watching that, and apparently some of the more curious attendees of that black hat security conference realized that something was up. And eventually told essentially all the internet about it, and eventually brought them down and turned them into police. But that was an interesting story. It didn't happen that long ago either.
Yeah. There's been TV shows where really cute scam where someone puts a box, just a cardboard box outside of a bank, and, you know, say ATM is broken, put deposits here. And we're programmed to obey signs, and so he goes back the next morning and
must put deposit in box.
Yeah, and goes back the next morning and takes the deposits. So the one story I read, the guy was nice enough to at least really deposit the checks and just kept the cash.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
And you know, his defense was he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't steal from anybody. They left the money for him.
Yeah.
What was that story?
And that works.
You were talking about a story earlier.
Almost going to the news.
All right. We'll get it after.
I was just going to say.
There we are.
Yep. We got to take a short break here. We're coming up to the top of the hour, folks. Yeah, you can't always go by that clock. But
there's a clock above. There's a clock below. There's clocks on every computer.
I go by.
None of them are right.
There's one master clock that's over here that you guys can't see that I handle, and that controls everything. So, we will be right back here, folks, after some short announcements. And you are listening to the longest-running computer show on members-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Sound bites, celebrating 20 years.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Hi, this is Gerald Albright. April is Jazz Appreciation Month. Did you know that jazz has influenced virtually every type of American music in the 20th century, from classical to Broadway to R&B? In fact, jazz has inspired painters, poets, novelists, dancers, and filmmakers. Let it inspire you. Jazz, born in America, enjoyed worldwide. For more information, visit smithsonianjazz.org.
Jazz 90.1 accepts vehicles. That's right. You can donate your unwanted vehicle to Jazz 90.1, have it picked up, and receive a tax deduction while we get cash to keep the jazz going strong on Jazz 90.1. If you would like to support Jazz 90.1 by donating your old vehicle, call 966-5299. That's 966-5299. Donating your old vehicle, another way to support Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Herb Alpert. Did you know that April is Jazz Appreciation Month? I've been inspired by great jazz musicians such as Louis Armstrong, Clifford Brown, and Miles Davis. Let jazz inspire you. Check out a jazz club. Read a book. Buy a CD. Take a child to hear a live jazz concert. Jazz, born in America, enjoyed worldwide. For further information, visit SmithsonianJazz.org.
Jazz 90.1 appreciates your support through membership. But did you know you can support Jazz 90.1 in other ways as well? For example, by donating your old vehicle. When you donate your old vehicle to Jazz 90.1, we receive cash and you get the tax deduction. We even come pick it up. To find out more, call 966-5299 When the time comes to change vehicles, think of Jazz 90.1 and call 966-5299.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Rochester, and you are listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1 and the Soundbites program. Yes, I happen to be Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I am Dennis Worth.
And we are here to take your computer questions, so don't be bashful. Pick up the phone, dial 966-5299, 1-800-790-0415, or you can look us up on the web and stream us if you're not in the Rochester area. So, you know, don't be shy, but please, give us a call, and we're taking, right now, we're doing some other computer questions that folks and have, over the past couple of weeks, we haven't had time to really get to because we're during the pledge drive, but we're trying to get caught up
right
on some of the previous emails. And let's see, I had another one here. I'm trying to waltz. For you folks that don't know, we call the security tango the waltz. The tango waltz. And what
Windows
is it?
Waltz.
The Windows waltz.
The Windows waltz,
right.
The Macarena.
And the Linux Lumbata.
Lumbata.
Yeah.
And then we got a call here. It says, I'm trying to waltz. Can't download either CW Shredder or Stinger to my PC. I can execute both files, but once I do that, both of them want to perform a scan. I can't reboot in safe mode. When do I neither? Boy, talk about mixed up. When I do, neither program is there, is what they're trying to say.
Right.
So it sounds like they are downloading them and they're trying to run.
The other thing, too, is, and I've said this previously, folks, if your antivirus software is updated, you do not need Stinger. We were talking about this just last week.
That's true.
Yep.
If Stinger is only for a very small, select group of files.
Their specific problem is probably that they are downloading the programs, or if they're using Internet Explorer, when you do a download, it pops up and says, do you want to save it or do you want to run it?
Mm-hmm.
If you hit run, it stays in the temporary folder and you can never find it again. So you need to save the program to your computer. And then when you boot into safe mode, you're actually running in a different username. There's the administrator username.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't see any of the files in the other username, your regular username. So when you save this Stinger file and save the CW Shredder file, you need to save them in a folder that all the users can see, like the C drive. So on your C drive, make a Tango folder so that when you log into any of the users, you can
shared.
See those files there.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of times when you install an actual program, the installer will ask you if you want to install it for the one user you're in or for all users. But when you're just downloading a little utility like Stinger, it's just a program that lives wherever you put it. So if you put it in the Steve user, then the Dennis user cannot see it. So you need to save it into a folder that all the users can see.
Right.
Now, does that work the same for Mac?
And the Mac, yeah.
There are some that ask you.
Do they still use suitcases?
Well, not exactly. We have something called bundles. So bundles are just—they're essentially a folder,
it's a package.
That's right.
Yeah. You folks tell you got to put it into this.
Well, fonts used to come in suitcases. In fact, fonts still come in suitcases. Yeah.
Not but, to be confused with the font management program called Suitcase.
Well, that's why it was called Suitcase. Yeah. But it's the same issue. When you download a program on your Mac,
mm-hmm.
Most of the time the installers will install it for all users by default.
Okay.
But some of the installers will ask you if you want to do it to the current user or to all users. And again, when you download anything, it's downloaded into your user folder, so the other users cannot see it. That's one of the points of having multiple users, is that every user has their own private files that the other users cannot see. So if you do want to share files with other users on your computer, both Windows and Mac make a shared folder available that is shared to other users on the same computer.
Got another quick one here from Barb from Rochester. It says, I'm trying to download malware via the Security Tango, and it won't install on my PC.
Boy, we're getting a lot of those today.
Well, you know what I think it is? a lot of them are getting infected so bad, at least we're seeing it in our shop,
yeah.
where I literally have to take the hard drive out of the machine, put it on our bench, which isolates it,
mm-hmm.
and run some other programs before I can even get malware bites and super anti-spyware to even run to start to clean it up.
Yeah, you're so infected already mm-hmm. that the anti-programs yep. cannot install.
They can't. Well, they're already being blocked.
Yep.
So you got to isolate it. Because I had another person, I went to their house to pick up the computer. You know, they said it was infected. And they said, well, can't you do it here? I go, what are you having for dinner?
And breakfast.
And is the spare room ready? Because, you know, it just can't happen. I mean, I could go back to the shop.
And, it's not cost effective, right?
It takes hours and hours and hours.
I'm a picky eater.
To run these scans sometimes.
Yeah. You always want to hold the remote for the TV.
Yeah. I got control. But no, you got to literally, you know, take it out, isolate it, and then you can then put it back in. And then, because they'll say, you know, I'll say, well, how long is this going to take?
Well, how fast is your computer?
And they, you know, you go, it depends. You know, my crystal ball is broken right now. That's still at the repair shop, so I can't give you a definite time estimate.
Yeah, between a week and a year.
Anything in between that.
Plus or minus.
Works
plus
or for minus, me. Yep. You know, but I mean,
tough. When you're in our business, and people always want to know, when's it going to be ready and how much is it going to cost?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And because those
are the
things,
only two questions you cannot answer.
Yes!
It's tough. It's not easy. We do our best to give estimates when we can, but...
Guesstimates.
You know,
yeah.
We don't always have control of all the variables involved. We wish we did.
Yep.
Life would be so much easier if we could predict that.
Yeah, based on other computers with similar issues, it took, you know, 2 days and cost $100.
Mm-hmm.
That there's no guarantee that that's what's going to be on your computer either.
Steve, tell me about this crazy horse I've been hearing about in this online game.
Oh, yeah. If you're addicted to WoW.
WoW?
The WoW is the World of Warcraft. It's a it's an MMORPG. Massively multiplayer online role-playing game, which basically means there's hundreds of thousands of people playing this game at the same time all over the world in this own virtual world. So the World of Warcraft, it's from a company called Blizzard. And they had a sale this week where you could buy a flying horse.
Finally.
A special flying horse called the Celestial Steed. And it's a flying horse that leaves little pixie dust trails behind it.
Does it have a horn on its head?
I'm not sure.
What else does it leave behind?
I'm not sure if those are horns or ears. Yeah.
Horses are usually pretty messy.
I'm glad that my computer doesn't have, smell-o-vision.
Smell-o-vision, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be bad news.
So earlier this week, Blizzard put this horse on sale in the game only. You had to buy it inside the game. It was $25 or 20 euros or about 17 pounds.
Okay.
Apparently, there was a 7-hour queue. Of several hundred thousand people lined up waiting to buy this horse.
Wait a minute.
So in the game, you had to join a line and stand in line.
Yay!
In the game.
Get out!
To buy this horse.
It's called Hello, Get a Life!
Yep.
So instead of like going to a store and standing in line like at Black Friday or something to buy something, you get online, fire up your game,
Your
sit in your chair, you get your drink and your Cheetos, and you go and you stand in line. And when the line moves 3 feet forward, you move your little person 3 feet forward. Is this how this works?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
They need to open some more cash registers or something.
It was a 7-hour queue that formed within 3 hours of the release.
No.
But
nothing is worth that much.
The really crazy thing is that's $3.5 million Blizzard made in an afternoon.
I don't know if that's
a million dollars an hour.
Still not. I refuse. It always amazes me. You see these folks like at Christmas time on Black Friday.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, they go there and they'll stand before
I
the store.
I resemble
store
this
store
remark, you know.
Yeah. From 3 to 5 a.m., you buy this.
I don't feel
player,
sorry for you.
$10 off.
I'm sorry. You know, I see all these folks and they're standing out there. One, usually here up in upper New York State, they're freezing their damn butt off because it's so cold out.
Well, it is November.
Yeah, and, Rochester, you don't like the weather. Wait a couple minutes, and it'll change.
For the worse.
Yeah. I mean, my brother always says, you know, Rochester summer is just usually 3 weeks of bad ice fishing.
So if we buy this magical horse, can we develop a plan, guys, to start have a business, and we'll develop WoW Horse Feed so that you can feed your horse?
Well, see, that it's like Farmville. Farmville is a game on Facebook where you make a farm. And you pay.
Nick was trying. Yep. His wife was trying to get him
into in there. You can pay real money to buy virtual farm stuff.
Right, that helps you play the game more efficiently. Play the game.
Yeah,
right?
you can buy better fences. You can buy animals. No. You can buy different seeds. Mm-mm. And so this the companies that make these online games are making millions of dollars selling fake stuff.
Well, and it's even worse than that. I've known people who have had their credit card compromised, and usually you'd expect somebody to go buy a fancy stereo or a big screen TV, but no, they found out. They found out it was compromised because they looked at their credit card bill and found out there were charges from the company that makes Farmville for buying, you know, level ups and all the other components you need to play that game more effectively.
Well,
it was incredible.
Yeah,
there was a case in the news last week about a young kid in England, you know, 12 or 13, I think he was, went through his allowance buying stuff for Farmville and then ran up all his mother's credit cards buying stuff for Farmville.
Ouch.
And so when his mother found out, you know, she properly grounded him. But the article was interesting, saying that she doesn't really blame the credit card companies, but that didn't stop her from asking for a refund.
Yeah, well, at least you don't have to stand in line, you know.
The last comment.
Yeah, we've got a comment in the chat room that says, virtual standing in line, you know, for when actual standing in line is just too stimulating.
Get a life.
It was actually a South Park episode where the carnival came to town, and it was all bogus rides and
things you can't
possibly win.
Right.
They had a standing in line ride. And so, of course, Kyle had to call shenanigans, and the townsfolk got their baseball bats and pitchforks.
Right, that's like
beat
a big
the crap out of the carnies.
That's a big insult in South Park is when somebody calls your game of chance and calls shenanigans on you.
Shenanigans.
What? You have another?
I didn't see any of the carnies. South Park just celebrated their 200th episode by getting together all the people they've ever insulted, got together to have a class action suit against South Park.
Oh, it was going to happen eventually.
I don't remember any of the carnies in the background because it's huge. Because there's been thousands of people they've insulted over the years.
All right, we got another one here. This is from John in Rochester. After running the Tango, I cannot get the programs and features up on the control panel. I wanted to uninstall the SpyBot program to find problems and other hangups. It sounds like that, and he's running Vista Home Edition. And it sounds like that machine is still infested. What it was ever on there is kind of hosed your machine. If you can't even get into the control panel, you know.
Yeah, it sounded out. Is the control panel not working, or is the add remove control panel not working?
Well, he's saying here, I cannot get the programs and features up on the control panel.
Yeah, so but his next sentence says he can't uninstall, which means that he is in the control panel running add remove.
Well, I think
programs.
He's in there, and you can see the files. You know, like you can see system, and you can see add remove. Or no, now in Vista it's programs and
names.
What was wrong with just leaving?
It took me forever the other day to find the sound control panel.
What's
wrong? I wanted to raise the volume.
Yeah,
it's not called sound anymore.
I mean, since Windows 3.1, it's always been add remove programs.
Right.
Yeah.
Why did they have to change it?
Probably a focus
programs
group.
And features.
Would you like?
Give me a break, Eastie.
Yeah.
That is so stupid.
But what happens frequently is the malicious programs will affect your add remove, so that you cannot add any programs, you cannot remove any programs because you're still infected.
Right. Well, we got that one program.
You got to think about it from the virus's point of view. The virus. Their goal is to be on the machine and never get off, because that's what's valuable for the virus writer. So they're going to shut down the ability for you to run any kind of stinging tools. They're going to shut down your ability to get updates for your antivirus program. They're going to shut down the ability to install or delete programs because they want your machine on and under their control.
Yep. You are not to get away from that.
And so then that's you're back to the issue where you got to take the hard drive out of that machine and scan it on a known clean machine.
Right, because you just can't trust what's on it
to
start up your computer completely anymore.
Yeah, no, they want full control.
Yep. We had a news story about, excuse me, I'm catching now, Google. Google is no longer investigating a fix for its Nexus One 3G issues.
What?
Apparently, the Nexus One, which is a hot new Android phone from Google, is having trouble with the 3G that you're having trouble getting on the internet, having trouble surfing over 3G. So Google has stopped investigating the problem, and their recommendation is to change your location.
When you say change your location, what do they mean?
If it doesn't work where you're standing now, move.
Walk somewhere else
and try again.
Huh?
Oh, that sounds like they're punting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When that, you know, like,
yep.
What else? Does it say anything else?
So the actual quote from Google's is, if you are still experiencing 3G issues, we recommend that you try changing your location or even the orientation of your phone, as this may help in areas with weaker coverage.
That sounds like it's an excuse
yeah,
that
hold
they
it up
pulled
in the air
out.
And keep yeah. going around and around and around.
While they try and think about something else.
Yeah.
And that's sort of been one of the back worries about a Verizon brand iPhone. The iPhone currently only runs in AT&T, and there's been a lot of call in the U.S. to run it on Verizon, partly to sort of share the problems, because AT&T mm-hmm. users are reporting yep. a lot of problems with a saturated network where the calls are being dropped and internet speeds are slow. So one of the solutions might be, you know, let other carriers handle it so they can spread the load out. Or the danger that people are worried about is that AT&T will get swamped and overloaded and start failing too, just like Verizon Verizon will, like AT&T was.
Yep.
So it's hard for a carrier to get so many new devices where it's so different a usage pattern. Previous smartphones, you know, like the BlackBerry and even the Palm Trio, you might get email on it. That was the big thing with a smartphone. You could read your email.
Right.
Email is text, you know, short bits of text, no big deal.
Sure.
But when the iPhone came out, now everyone is doing web surfing and video and graphics and mm-hmm. all this really intensive data stuff.
Right, all those apps.
All those apps, and it's just saturating AT&T's network.
Okay, tell you what, we got a caller. Let's go to the phones, and we got Victor. Hello, Victor.
Hey, Dave. Microsoft Fixit Center, is that something worthwhile, or should we stay away from something like that?
Oh, it's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Not much. Not much. I still have issues with it. I mean, you know, get so entrenched with Microsoft stuff that it turns around and then they don't support it. You know, they bring stuff on.
It'll last for a while and then disappear.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, bottom line is I'd say, I wouldn't bother with it.
It says it's beta, too, so that's kind of a...
Guess whose machine's going to get messed up if it... You get to be the lucky member.
And it lists common solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most people don't have common problems.
Not anymore.
And the variety of Windows computers, so much different hardware, so much different software installed, it's virtually impossible to have a common problem because everything is so different.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it wouldn't hurt to look at it. But
that's about all I'd do.
Don't know if you'd.
Do they charge money for that, or is that just a feature that you can install?
It currently looks like it's free
for now,
and it doesn't look like it's much different than searching the knowledge base like you already could before. And that's sort of one of the big things when our customers call, or even here on the radio, when people call with problems, you Google your error message and see what pops up, and oftentimes there's a Microsoft knowledge base article about how to fix it. Or there's, you know, some discussion group where they're discussing how to fix it. So it's interesting to see what Microsoft is going to transition from a knowledge base you search retroactively versus a fix-it library where you proactively find solutions.
So is this solution, you sign up for this, you have it on your computer, and then they have some buttons that just say, go and fix this for me, I'm having this particular problem?
No, it looks like it's an online... website where you can search for problems. Assuming, of course, your problem isn't you can't get online.
Yeah, so Victor, if you want to give it a shot and call us back next week to see if your computer's still running, that'd be great.
I think not.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling, sir. Take care. All right, folks, guess what? We got to take a short break. Yes, I know, time just flies by when you're having fun, but we will be back just momentarily, just after few brief announcements.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno.
inviting you to a musical party this and every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. Our guests may include Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Bing Crosby, Rosemary Clooney, or who knows, maybe even Count Basie or Joe Williams, Bobby Darin. Lady Ella herself could stop by. It's a musical celebration every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. That's Sundays at 12 noon right here on Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Yusef Lateef, Kenny Barron, Muhal Richard Abrams, Cedar Walton, Bill Holman, Bobby Hutcherson, Annie Ross, and George Avakian. This year's National Endowment for the Arts Jazz Masters. I'm Wendell Pierce. Join us as they gather to hear and play jazz history. It's a very special Jazz at Lincoln Center.
Wednesday, April 28th, from 6 to 7 p.m., only on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
When you like the music you hear on Jazz 90.1, you want it to continue to be there for you the next time you tune in. And that's exactly what happens when listeners become members of Jazz 90.1. Membership ensures that Jazz 90.1 can continue to bring you the jazz you love. You might even call membership a kind of music insurance. So if you enjoy the music on Jazz 90.1, make it a policy to become a member or renew your membership by calling 966-5299.
Be sure to join Jazz 90.1 for a live performance of the Jive Street 5, Wednesday, April 28th from 7 to 8 p.m. The Jive Street 5 features Mike Van Allen on piano, Jim Steele on trumpet and flugelhorn, Sheldon Trippi on bass, Brian King on drums, and Todd Yarton on vocals. The Jazz 90.1 Live Studio Concert Series continues with the Jive Street 5, Wednesday, April 28th from 7 to 8 p.m. on Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Sid O'Connor. Join me Sunday mornings from 7 until noon right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and it's Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And for, again, all you folks that are tuning in late, yes, Nick is okay. He is still suffering from withdrawal from the Adroid Clinic, and the glassiness in his eye is dissipating, so he will be back next week. Doctors think he'll be all right with app withdraw. But with that, let's go to the phones. We got Frank on the line. Go ahead, Frank.
Hi. I have an Acer laptop, and it works fine on the power supply, but the moment you put the battery in, the mouse freezes up.
Mouse freezes up.
Is this a trackpad that's built into the body of the laptop, or is it an external standalone mouse?
Well, either one, either the touchpad, the touchpad will freeze up, or if you put an external mouse in, that'll freeze up. But the moment you put that battery in, everything freezes up. You can't use the computer.
You keep saying the phrase "put the battery in."
Yeah, what battery?
The regular laptop battery. In other words, if you run your laptop just on the power supply without the battery.
So the battery is the battery is physically removed from the computer.
Yes, physically removed.
Because they work.
It shouldn't.
And the keyboard works too once it's off of wall power.
Oh, once that battery is in, nothing works.
Nothing works. The computer doesn't work at all.
Doesn't work at all.
The keyboard doesn't.
The mouse locks up, and the touchpad locks up, and all the keys.
And the keyboard. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a lot worse than just the mouse not working.
Yeah, it goes over to battery power, and the machine just becomes unresponsive. It sounds like.
Right.
How old is the battery?
I tried changing batteries. I took it to a shop one time, and they put another battery in, and it did the same thing.
That's weird, because there were issues with bad batteries where they would start to swell.
I've got one on my webpage that you can see that where the battery literally caught on fire and totally destroyed the machine. But
and since most batteries are underneath where the trackpad lives, when it swells up, it will push the bottom of the trackpad and prevent it from working. But if it's a brand new battery, or even a different battery, it still should work.
That's right. That's what I figured, but it didn't work.
There are different.
It didn't matter which battery we used.
There are different settings in your Energy Saver. What's it called on the Windows? It's Energy Saver on the Mac. Power settings under Windows,
uh-huh.
Where you can have different things turn on and off depending on whether you're on battery or AC. So, for example, when you're on AC, the screen will stay on longer. It will be brighter. The processor will run faster. Maybe something got set in there that when you're on battery power, it shuts off the keyboard and mouse because they draw power.
Yeah, that could be.
Is this the Acer Aspire 1 that
yes.
you have? All right. So I did a quick Google search for Acer dead-on battery, and I got a forum posting over at notebookreview.com that says that there's a small code problem in the BIOS and that prevents a discharged battery from recharging. So Acer can update the BIOS quite easily. Your batteries are probably fine. You just need a code tweak. You could probably make contact with Acer themselves. They can give you an update that will help you fix this, keep your battery charged, and allow it to run.
Yeah, they might send them a disk to put in or a CD to run, and it'll safely flash it for you. It's not something what we would recommend here in the studio telling folks to, you know, do a flash update. Because
no.
if you mess up a flash update, the machine will be totally worthless.
Yeah, they call it bricking the machine when you turn it into that. I'd suggest making contact with Acer.
Yep.
State your situation with them, and with any luck, they'll know about this fix, and they can continue on serving you.
So a bug in the BIOS is using.
I called Acer one time, and they says, "Oh, you're not under warranty, and we can't help you out."
Well, they'll help you if you pay them if you pay for support.
Yeah.
Well, you could call them, though, and ask and say, all right, I was reading up on the blogs that there is a BIOS fix for it.
We've had customers try that, and they said, well, you don't have a support contract. We can't answer your question.
Oh, I have good
news.
And
then so you pay the support contract, and they say the answer is no, you can't do that.
That's right.
So how about in the power settings? You said look in the power
hold
settings.
Hold on. Dennis has got an Frank, hold on one second.
Yeah, I read just a little bit further. I'm reading along in the forums as we go along here. There's a guy who had the same problem. He updated his BIOS and fixed the issue. I've got a link here, and what we can do is we can... pass it over to Steve here.
Yeah, it'll we'll be on our link list in a moment or three.
And we'll send it over and put it on our link list, and you'll be able to get it from the website.
What page are you on? 57735?
Right.
No, I'm on a different URL now, too.
Okay.
We'll find it in a minute, yeah.
So be sure and check that out and see what you can learn. And if you feel comfortable doing that, then give it a try.
All right. Thank you very much.
No problem. And tell you what, let us know how you make out on that, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So as we're trying to copy a URL from one to the other, what's the number at the top there?
Very long. All right, you're getting that on up there.
Which I don't know what you mean.
All right, we got John from Rochester. He's got Windows Vista Home, and he says, after running the Tango, that's the same one. Must have printed it off twice.
All right,
let's go to...
Keep you on your toes when you've got two of them like that.
Well, I'm printing these off at dark 30 in the morning, it seems like. And this week, I've been trying to... past day or so, I've just been fighting a darn cold.
I've got one here about a program that I know we've talked about, Steve, called SpinWrite. SpinWrite's put out by a guy named Steve Gibson over at grc.com, puts this out. Fantastic tool for us geeks. Helps you to recover information and make drives readable when they start exhibiting situations where you're not able to get the information off it the way you want to. So SpinWrite is a program that typically you buy it, and it's very, very small. It's very tightly coded. It's well less than a megabyte. So you can burn that to a disk, and it finishes in no time. In fact, it finishes so fast, you often think something's going wrong when you try and use it. So they say that this is from Bob Kester in Fairport, and he says, related to SpinWrite, you can put it on a USB flash drive, even though he says somebody here on the show said that you can't do that. He says on his machine, he was able to do this, and all you have to do is take your flash drive, and you have to put on an old version of MS-DOS, and he gives us some links that we'll make sure to include. You make some adjustments to the old-school config.sys file, and then you can run SpinWrite right from the flash drive, so you can boot from that rather than having to burn it to a CD, which I think is a great tip.
I would almost expect the installer to do that automatically. The SpinWrite installer includes FreeDOS, which it outputs on a floppy or a CD.
Yep, that's true. And the biggest problem usually is that there are still some PCs, especially older PCs, that might start to be having these kind of hard drive issues that are too old to be able to boot from a USB flash drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything with, especially, and I have them in, Windows 98 machines.
Still getting those?
Had an old Pentium 2 running Windows 98, and basically they used it for two things. One, to get on the internet with dial-up and WordPerfect.
Oh, then it's fine.
That's all they needed, and the thing was dying, so I had another machine that came in, and it was a Pentium 4, one of the earlier models. So I was able to help him out, because he's a very good friend of mine, and said, here you go. You know, at least get him up to now. A Pentium 4, he's just amazed at how much faster it is. Even though it's a bottom-of-the-line Pentium, you know,
sure,
4 machine compared to his Pentium 2,
relative,
it's like,
right.
Oh, ooh, I could do this and I can do that. He's called me a couple of times. Dave, did you know I could? Yep, no problem. You can do that. No problem.
Yeah, it's like you get there and you sit behind it and it's, suddenly you can launch the space shuttle with this thing. It's fantastic, the speed difference that you can see just by updating machines. Even we see that, Steve, even with machines that are only a few years old, there's a fairly decent speed increase these days. People are still doing the exact same things on their new machines, but they're getting them done a little bit faster, and sometimes they have slightly more capabilities on their new machine.
Yep.
But,
and what's interesting is that people always complain about how slow their machine is. You know, it's only a couple years old, and it's really slow. But it was really, really fast a couple years ago when you bought it, right? But now you're trying to do so much more with it that, you know, two, three years old, and you had 1 gig of RAM back then, and you might have had an 80-gig hard drive, and there's now, you know, 500 megs free. And that can often cause some interesting sorts of problems on current computers trying to run, you know, video and flash and all the extra stuff mm-hmm. we want to run today.
No, it's true. It happens to me all the time when I'm going to work at a client and they've just gotten a new machine and they want to update it. I get done and finished with it and I realize how fast it is. And then I go back home and I sit in front of my machine that was new, you know, like you said, 2 years ago. And suddenly you say, well, I'm waiting a little bit here and I'm waiting a little bit there. And I'm like, boy, you can really tell the difference.
Yep. And then the irony is that the computer is doing 3 or 4 billion things per second and it spends so much of its time waiting for you.
Right. On the off chance that you end up waiting for your machine, it does feel a little weird.
Yeah.
Because you're used to them being just ever-present and ever-ready.
Yeah.
Okay.
No matter how fast it is, it feels slow at some point to you.
So the somebody's got an update here about the Windows Waltz. Dan Feuerstein from Rochester. He talks to the guys here, and he says, good to see you at the Soho operation. I think, isn't that where Nick got his droid?
Yes, that's where it all started. Uh-huh. That's when he started going within, you know, going into withdrawal. He just had this glazed look that whole afternoon. Steve and I are sitting there, and he kept going, Dave, did I tell you I got my droid? Steve,
well,
did I tell you? He
looked at the booth, which was like 3 down from us, yep, for half the morning before he got up the nerve to go over and ask.
Yep.
Because he wasn't.
And they felt so sorry for him.
Well, he wasn't due. His contract didn't expire for 3 or 4 months yet, so he couldn't get a new phone without paying ridiculous amounts of money mm-hmm. for it.
But they felt
they
sorry.
They found a way.
Yep.
Wow.
Because he's Nick.
So Dan says that the Windows Waltz, and we talked about this earlier, he says it needs a little bit of editing. So in step 4, you're going to try to install that firewall that you downloaded in step 2. So Dan went back to step 2, and lo and behold, the instructions for downloading the firewall had been removed. He says, I agree the Windows firewall is sufficient, but you just might want to edit that back in step 2. So we'll keep that in mind and go back and make sure that we update that.
I'm still having issues. Just for the folks to know, right now, just to let you know, I'm not ignoring you. There is some issues if you're filling out the request for the Soundbite CD. It's broken.
Did you ever find out who was selling the Soundbite CD that wasn't you?
No, it's some other company. It's not even selling the CD. It's Soundbite. I'll have to ask Sam. Sam is my office manager, and she can get in on that. But yeah, there's some other company doing a bogus one.
Well, one thing I did find out is Dave's website has an issue in his domain setups.
Okay.
Most websites you have to do www.enrightpc.com.
Right.
But in a lot of websites, you can just do nwritepc.com.
Mm-hmm.
And the web browser fills in the W's, or it just works without the W's. I found on Dave's site, you have to put the W's in to get to your site, Dave.
Oh,
I've
got to get that up to date, Dave.
And so
that's Jerry, I mean.
Yeah, so Jerry's got to fix Dave's domain record, or we have to change all the links to Dave's website to include the W's.
Okay.
Well, I have to talk
and
to
that
Jerry.
Could be why your Soundbite CD request
lot,
isn't
and
working.
And I notice, like, if I'm trying to send, that's why when I have some time, I got to talk to Jerry, because I notice if I'm trying to forward, you know, an email to my folks in the shop, they're not getting it. Because I had this great one, my friend Kenzie in Oregon sent me this link to this cat video. And it was...
The cat licking the iPod?
No. This was all different cat stunts to where this one cat's come hiding in the bushes and it comes running out and attacks this kid and knocks him over. This one person throws a cat up in the air and it sticks to the ceiling.
I think the internet was invented specifically for the cat video, as a genre instead. That's the only thing I've seen recently. I mean, there are entire websites dedicated to nothing but pictures of your cat.
LOL cat.
Did
you see the video of the cat playing with the iPad? Cat figured out how to paw around and control the iPad to in a painting program.
Okay.
Then there was a dog would just bark at it. So apparently cats like iPads and dogs don't.
Discriminating taste. Tell you what, we got Sal online. Let's go take Sal. Sal, how can we help you, sir?
I just had a question for you guys. Did you see online there was a website where the guy created a robot that tested all the various smartphones and their touch screens to see the quality of the touch screen?
Yeah, we saw that.
A little while ago.
You see the unfortunately the droid, like, fared the worst of them.
Yeah, the digitizer that comes on smartphones that recognizes your touch, how accurate that digitizer is makes the phone work all the better. So one of the websites did a test of all the different smartphones, the droids, a couple from HTC, the Apple iPhone, and they used a robot so they could do exactly repeatable testing, and found that the iPhone's touchpad is so much more accurate than any of the other phones that it makes the other phones look terrible.
Right. Actually, the Palm didn't do so bad, although that may not be around anymore.
Yeah, I've heard that they're going to discontinue that one, unfortunately.
That one may be fading into the sunset.
Palm has put themselves up for sale, and one of the rumors would be that HTC would buy them to get the patent library so they can defend themselves against Apple's lawsuit.
Right, and I guess Radio Shack is not carrying the Pre and the Pixie anymore?
Yeah, they're taking it out of their system, apparently.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Wow.
Just wanted to find out if you guys saw that.
Yeah, well, thanks for giving us a call, Sal.
Yeah, it was interesting seeing the pictures where on the iPhone, the robot was drawing diagonal lines, and on the iPhone it was diagonal lines, and on all the other phones it was squiggly lines like an Etch-a-Sketch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I tell you what, folks, we got to take a short break. It's that time of the hour, and we will be back very soon to take more of your questions.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
Yusef Lateef, Kenny Barron, Muhal Richard Abrams, Cedar Walton, Bill Holman, Bobby Hutcherson, Annie Ross, and George Avakian. This year's National Endowment for the Arts Jazz Masters. I'm Wendell Pierce. Join us as they gather to hear and play jazz history. It's a very special Jazz at Lincoln Center.
Wednesday, April 28th, from 6 to 7 p.m., only on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Be sure to join Jazz 90.1 for a live performance of the Jive Street 5, Wednesday, April 28th from 7 to 8 p.m. The Jive Street 5 features Mike Van Allen on piano, Jim Steele on trumpet and flugelhorn, Sheldon Trippi on bass, Brian King on drums, and Todd Yarton on vocals. The Jazz 90.1 live studio concert series continues with the Jive Street 5, Wednesday, April 28th from 7 to 8 p.m. on Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Greg Lefebvre. Join me every Sunday night at 7 o'clock for Doc's Juke Joint on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back, folks. You are listening to the longest-running computer show on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We are Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And we're here, and we've got...
I'm still waiting for that third. I talk third, and I keep throwing my timing off.
Well, we've got Steve on the line. Go ahead, Steve. You got a question?
Yeah, hi. I have a fairly new digital camera, and I have a new HDTV, and I want to go and see pictures from the camera to the TV, and I'm about 15 feet away from the TV.
You have to check your camera's manual and see what output connectors it has.
Uh-huh.
Many of them will have a television out cable. In fact, many of them will come with that cable. That you can then connect into the television itself. Most of the time, it's a composite video cable. Or the other thing you can quite frequently do is take the memory card out of the camera, and you can get a memory card reader for your television. We happen to sell them at MacF.
Nice.
There are memory card readers for your computer, so you take the memory card out of your camera, put it into your computer, and read the pictures that way. There are similar memory card readers for your television, so you plug your memory card into your television and can view all the pictures and video on that memory card. And, in fact, some new televisions have memory card readers built into the television already. Because they know people are doing that, especially Sony, because Sony sells cameras and televisions.
Right.
They're including camera readers right in the television.
Now, how would I go about viewing the stuff on TV if I bought a memory card from you?
As I said, either you plug a cable between the camera and the television, and you have to check your camera's manual to see what kind of cable that would be. Or with a memory card reader plugged into your television's usually composite port, you then would pull the memory card out of your camera. Typically, they're SD cards. Sometimes they're different types.
Right.
And then when you plug that into your television, you would switch your television to either the AUX 1 or AUX 2, whatever connection port you have that memory card reader plugged into.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
Sure, no problem.
You're welcome.
In fact, Time Warner has a service where you can upload pictures from your camera to the Time Warner service and then see your pictures on television.
Really?
The channel 820 something in there.
Only at your own house, right?
No. Anyone with Time Warner digital cable tuning to channel 820 something or other can see everybody's pictures that have been uploaded.
That's interesting.
Well, it's like the internet. You're posting your pictures on the internet. For anyone could see them if they happened by them. So now, you know, you can tell grandma, turn to channel 821, and you can see my pictures.
Right now.
Yep. Right now.
All right, tell you what, we got another caller. We got Rick on the line. Go ahead, Rick.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Oh, just peachy, as somebody would say.
Oh, great. A quick question. I have some old 3.5-inch discs that I'm unable to read. I have information on them. I know it's there. I done some Excel files, that type of stuff. When I put it into the machine I was doing those files on to read that, it doesn't show anything. There's nothing on the disk.
Quite often that is a misalignment between the write tracks on the disk and the read heads on the floppy drive. Especially if it's an old disk.
Okay, now I've taken it to another machine, and even on another machine it doesn't.
Yeah. Do you still have the same floppy drive that those files were written with?
Yes.
Does it work on that drive?
It does not.
That's
where originally the problem started.
Yeah. It could just be that the floppy disk has failed and you need to go to your backup.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
You might be able to run some drive utility software to attempt to recover that.
But. Yes. Some SpinRite.
SpinRite is another good one.
I heard you guys talking about that earlier. That's why I called.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. SpinRite can.
Can you use that program to try to read them?
You can. Yeah. Give it a shot. It can't hurt.
It's not going to just. It does IDE drives. Is
it
floppy
does
an
do
IDE?
IDE. It does do SATA drives.
Yep. SATA and IDE.
Might do floppies.
Yeah.
There are a couple of other programs that commercial programs. There's one Data Rescue from ProSoft Engineering,
right?
Yep.
That are designed for reading camera cards that may also work with floppies as well.
Okay.
But it may be that the floppy has failed and you need to run a recovery program on it.
Okay.
Don't forget to make backups in the future.
I heard you guys talking about it earlier, so I figured I'd give a call and see if that was maybe an option for me to do with that.
Yeah. Hey, give it a shot and let us know.
And I'll spin right. From a floppy. I don't know if it will run on floppies.
Give it a shot. I think it would.
It's an $80 program, so that's one of the things. Yeah. It's not something the average person would buy, but you know, PC repair shops often have it.
Mm. Well, we got a number of different utilities that we can run on floppies. Matter of fact, I still about a month ago, believe it or not, still had the connection and hookup to run a 5.25.
Yeah.
And this one client brings in literally a whole box.
5.25, wow.
Of 5.25. He had to have at least 30 of these.
Well, he was all out of 8-inch ones, right?
Yeah.
He might have had those too. So he brings in all these 5.25. You know, like I say, it's a long box. And then he brings in a 25-pack of CDs. And he goes, could you do me a favor? He says, put these, you know, all these, copy these files onto the CDs.
Yeah, but what are you going to do with the other 24 CDs?
That was a point. When he came back in, he looks at it and he goes, so how many did you use them all? I go, here's your, and I says,
I didn't even use half of it.
He goes, huh? Because a lot of them, you know,
five and a quarter were 100K, were they 200K?
360 at the most.
Yeah, 360 right? Or 1.4K.
Yeah, and that's...
And, you know, the high-density ones, double-sided, double-density.
Right.
And, but, you know, you look at a file, he had a Word document, 1K.
On one disk, yeah.
Yeah, 2K.
That's the way we used to do it back then.
Yeah, and, you know, I put them all on there, and I says, I didn't even close the session because you still got room. You can put more on there. He goes,
right. Well, these days, the song you download and buy from iTunes is orders of magnitude larger than anything we used to store back then.
Yeah, a typical song is about 3 to 4 megs, and that's 4 floppy disks.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons that MP3 players took off is because an audio CD is 700 megs. So you're looking at 700 floppy disks for one audio CD.
So yeah, almost a gigabyte.
Almost a gigabyte. So when the MP3 compression format came out, it was a 10% compression. 10% of original file size. So now that 700 meg CD was down to about 70 megs, and that would fit on some of the early flash drives that were 64 megs.
Right.
And so now you could fit a whole album onto a single flash drive.
And it still sounded pretty good.
Yeah. Although I hear from audiophiles that are cringing.
Well,
because a whole generation,
we can feel it.
Yeah, whole generation of kids have grown up listening to crappy sounding MP3s and thinking that's normal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are you gonna do? You know, I mean, and plus, it sounds so much different.
It's so different now. You've got
the olden days. You'd put Pink Floyd on the stereo. You'd put the giant
headphones
on.
Yeah.
And you sit there and read the album cover and all the liner notes that came with it.
Yeah, kids don't understand what liner notes are anymore. But yeah, we've kind of gone two different directions. You go and you look at the TV that's in your house, you've got more resolution than you've ever had, but the kids are also watching TV online, on Hulu and on YouTube. And up until
Netflix,
recently...
Netflix, you can get, download it, a movie, you don't have to wait.
Right, you can stream it right through. But typically the video quality on those is so really ratcheted down so they can get across the internet and over to you.
Mm-hmm.
So kids have it... They have in two completely different directions. You've got your Blu-ray discs for high-def movies, but you are watching YouTube videos that are recorded on, Flip Video or something else that's, or your phone, for instance, that just doesn't have the capabilities.
Yep. And I always hear jokes, make jokes about people who wonder why the Mac doesn't have a Blu-ray CD player in the Mac itself.
For DVDs?
For playing Blu-ray DVDs on your 13-inch screen.
Well,
you can't really see a Blu-ray difference until you get about 50 inches anyway.
Yep.
But it's a feature point. Some PCs have a Blu-ray player on them.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Tell you what, we're going to try to squeeze one more call before
we get done
here. And we got Kevin on the phone. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hi, I'm calling from Greece.
Welcome to Greece.
I've got a laptop, an old IBM ThinkPad. I think it's like an R31 or something like that. Lately, when I've been using it, and I don't use it very much, I charged up the battery, says it's fully charged, but when I try to run it on the battery, it immediately stops running. It'll run fine on the AC, but then it has lost all idea of what date and time it is, and I have to go back in and reset the date and time.
Yeah, it's probably the internal battery.
Well, the external battery
Or both.
Or yeah, both, yeah.
But the one that keeps track of the date and time inside, is mainly is the, there's an internal, quite often there, 90% of them are a flat wafer battery.
Yeah, it's like a watch battery.
Yeah, and it's got small thin wires. Some of the companies make it easy to get two of them. Others, you got to go take it to a repair shop.
And a lot of times, some of the laptops don't have internal batteries at all. Because they use the external battery. So when the external battery loses power, it loses the date and time.
Yep.
And it's not uncommon for older batteries to lose their longevity. They only last a few minutes. So even though the battery says it's full, that might be 5 minutes.
Okay.
Where it used to be 5 hours.
Okay, but sometimes there might be a wafer battery in there, but because it's a laptop, they don't make it easy for me to change it. I got to bring it in the shop.
Yep. Yeah. Sometimes you can refresh a battery by draining it completely and then charging it completely, but it may just be that it's old and worn out.
Yeah, for the like most laptops, though, that wafer battery, that's not going to cut it for it.
If you can for your main battery, though, if you put in ThinkPad R31 battery into Google, you're going to get a bunch of places where they will be happy to sell you one. It looks like the prices are between $30 and $50 or so, depending on where you get it from.
Okay.
And that'll definitely get you back up and running.
Sure. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you for calling.
Now, on the Mac, there's a program built in that will tell you how many cycles your battery has run.
Mm-hmm.
In the older Macs, it was typically about 300 cycles was normal.
Right.
And now Apple is pushing these high longevity batteries that will last for 1,000 recharge cycles.
Wow.
Which they're saying is about 5 years of normal use.
And they're saying that those are, what, 10-hour runtimes?
Yeah, the latest MacBooks can have up to a 10-hour of runtime. And some of that is because they've stopped using user replaceable batteries, so they don't have to have the latches and the mechanisms and the holding points inside the computer.
They can put a lot more battery in it.
Right, so the batteries are physically bigger. The same thing on the iPad. You know, 90% of the internal space on the iPad is the battery.
Mm-hmm.
So because they can have bigger batteries, they have longer life to them. And because they last so long, you don't end up with a landfill full of batteries, because most people end up just throwing away their battery.
Yep.
Even though it's a hazardous material, the lithium in the battery is a hazardous material, and you're not legally supposed to throw them away. But a lot of people end up doing it. So now Apple is really pushing long life batteries that last at least until you sell the laptop to somebody else, and then it's their problem.
Well, but you know, that's one of the things to check when you buy a used laptop is run Coconut Battery on the Mac or another tool on the PC and see how much life you've got left in that thing.
Okay, folks, tell you what, it's just been a slice of heaven. Glad you folks could enjoy, you know, and listen in this week on Soundbites. And I tell you what, let's do it again next week. We promise Nick will be back. And Dennis, I'd like to thank you for filling in for Nick the past two weeks. You've done a stellar job keeping both Nick, Steve and I going here with the various questions. Again, thank you very much, sir. And hey, folks, this has been Soundbites, and we'll see you next week.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Here are the club calendar highlights for Saturday, April 24th. John Nugent with the Bob Snyder Trio play at the Grill at Strathallan this evening from 8:30 till 12 midnight. Tom Passamonte and Special Blend are at Pomodoro's on University Avenue. There's a Spring Fling Swing Dance with Andy Stobie and the Greater Finger Lakes Jazz Orchestra, 7 till 10:30 this evening in Canandaigua at All Things Art. If you're looking for blues, the Po' Boys Brass Band plays at Abilene tonight. That's from 9 o'clock. Joe Beard and his blues band play at the Dinosaur Barbecue at 10. And Deep Blue is at Rab's Woodshed from 10 till 2. Save the dates for the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival, June 11th through 19th. For ticket and club pass information, visit rochesterjazz.com. Listen for club calendar highlights four times daily on Jazz 90.1. For more club calendar information, visit our website, jazz901.org. For Jazz 90.1, I'm Joelle Van Buren.
Hi, this is trumpeter Chris Bode, and I want to remind you that April is Jazz